important, or this is why I think it did not meet scientific acceptability. If the group agrees with that, we can work with that in terms of being able to present something to the public of the reasons for your eventual not recommending. David, do you think that can work if we at least make sure we understand under each criteria the reason?
I think that's what we have been doing.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
So then we would not have to do this.
Well,
one by one?
On this one, to Kathleen's point, the issues in six were very similar, and I actually think they were sort of out there. We could argue about whether the research exists or not, but there were some fundamental sort of harmonization, usability issues, and some scientific issues that came up, I think, that apply here. So for acceptability and usability, that was where I think we had issues.
So this is the other option, because as hopefully you understood all along, that these decisions are committee decisions, not individual reviewer decisions. That if on a particular measure you don't feel capable of voting, then don't vote on that measure. But you know, we really do need to have these decisions grounded in the criteria. That's what the criteria are there for. And we want to get a sense that the committee has addressed those, and also that the final recommendation makes sense. So if you know, the vote on the criteria are different
But we don't need to know how many think it's complete, partial, minimal, or non-responsive.
Generally, we have been doing that. If you want to put forward that a particular rating based on the primary reviewers and see if people agree with that, we can work with that as well. But we still need to have these decisions grounded in the criteria.
I have actually a suggestion that might speed it up. Certainly where there's unanimity among both reviewers, we could simply, you know, make a motion that we adopt their, you know, rationale for either, you know, we adopt their rating. You know, that would be, we could do that, and then if people disagreed, they could opt out, maybe disagree. But it does seem very time consuming to go through each one of these and give four options for each one. When we haven't read, yeah, we don't know.
Diane, you need
to... Oh, sorry. Diane Meyer, that we were intended to be, you know, pretty intimately familiar with all the measures in order to be able to vote at this level of detail. So, you know, had I known that, perhaps, and had we had enough time to do that, then this might have been a reasonable request. But I don't want to vote in any direction on something I haven't read, other than the, you know, on the, this level of detail. We have to trust each other and the work. Otherwise, we should all be reviewing everything.
This is Kathleen. That's exactly, that was my point to begin with. I think that all of us in this room are either researchers or have done research. Most of us in this room are PhDs and MDs, at least at the MS level. And so I think we should have had more. If you wanted us to vote on every one of these issues, usability, feasibility, scientific, then we should have had adequate time to have reviewed it. I agree that we can go along with the two reviewers.
Yeah, let me suggest a modification of what Lisa, I think, presented, and it may meet still the thing is to hear the recommendation from the two reviewers. But I think we should... And if you want to put on the record, you can put down what they voted there. But I think the vote, ultimately, we're really voting collectively as a group on this. And I think we should have the discussion so we know where it is. So it really is going to be the up or down vote, or the vote on whether this should be go forward as is, should go forward with modifications, time limited, with or without modifications, or it's not ready for prime time. And then use the two reviewers' comments to reflect the committee's work of what's out there. But then not go through each of the votes. It's not a good use of our time, and it's not productive. We're going to spend less time actually talking about meaningful reasons why we have concerns. And I think that would be a more meaningful way. So, I mean, what I would say then on this for this measure is that we've had a lot of similar discussions before, I think, as Bruce said. There's some disagreement about usability and feasibility, which we may want to hear a little bit more about. But let's sort of take their two comments. They can go in, but let's really have a broader up or down vote on the measure itself. Because in essence, that's really what, you know, when I tried to break it out before, you all thought we had voted on the whole thing anyway. So I think it makes more sense to move it in that way. That would be more productive use of our time. I've seen a lot of head nodding. Okay. Janet can call me and say ban me from NQF after this.
I think as long as we get specific comments about the criteria, as you've been doing, as you've been going through, that we can put that together.
So it may be useful between Betty and Bruce. You just had some discrepancy in usability and feasibility that I think we should sort out a bit.
With the exception of the fact that I'm a definitive no, overall, what I submitted is, I don't know if that's acceptable, but what I submitted on the measure in writing stands. I'm looking at Karen because I think there's a process here. We're all learning.
Right, and we are too. With every project, we learn something new. So.
I mean, do you want me to list them off again so that someone, because I have comments on all four.
I think the question is that you thought it was
completely
usable and...
completely feasible, completely important, right. But scientific acceptability and usability especially, period, those two were much more problematic.
Okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. I thought you had said complete for usability. So the discrepancy is just feasibility.
Scientific acceptability and usability. I'm gonna say I had concerns about that were very specific.
Bruce, I'm going to hold you to the same standard I do with my son. I reserve the right to change my opinion at any time, so you feel free to change your opinion on that.
By the way, I know what you're referencing, and you're correct, but as far as my remarks that I've made through this, scientific acceptability and usability are the issues for me.
So the measure overall would be...
I recommend no.
You recommend no, Betty?
I recommend no.
So overall recommendation is no. Any discussion on that? In favor?
In favor of no.
In favor of no. Yeah, in favor of the vote before us. Double negative, yeah. Any abstaining? Any against? Okay. Next measure, then. Pain measures. RTI is going to give an overview of the pain measures. While RTI is going to, amongst the primary and secondary reviews, are there any of these measures, short or long term? Some of you came up to me during the break that we should bundle together and talk about and maybe discuss together. I know that there's been a lot of talk about for the immunization measures to do long and short term together, each one, because of the similarity and the nature of it. Maybe you'd actually recommend all of these done together? Concerns are going to be identical for... Okay. Any of the other primary reviewers on the pain measures agree with that? Do bundle them all together? Okay. Are you guys both... Are you guys the only two primary secondary reviewers on all the pain measures? No one else doing anything? You didn't share the pain? Okay. Go ahead.
No, sorry.
RTI, you're going to give a quick overview of them?
Yeah, okay. I'll be giving an overview on the group of the measures, so both pain and pressure ulcers, and also I'll try to limit my discussion of importance and cut to the chase, so in the interest of time and what Dr. Gifford had to say. In regards to these measures, the purpose of the pain measures specifically is to monitor and report on the percentage of both the long-stay and short-stay residents who have moderate to severe pain, and a new measure we're introducing to report the percent of short-stay residents with effective pain management. In regards to importance, you know, the evidence definitely suggests that pain is consistently undertreated in nursing facilities, especially with residents with cognitive impairment. And at least 40 to as many as 85% of nursing facility residents have persistent pain, and pain is often not fully documented. In regards to the Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 1987, the mandate was to promote maximum practicable functioning among residents, and hence pain and pain management is very important. The Advancing Excellence in America's Nursing Home has made management of residents' pain one of its major goals, and both of the pain severity measures are currently included in CMS's publicly reported quality measures for the five-star system. In regards to validity, Dr. Sleeber and colleagues in their testing of the development of the 3.0, the CAPR from gold standard to facility nurses was high, 0.96, and gold standard to gold standard nurse, again high, 0.96, and nurses participating in the study, 88% reported better, that the new items underlying the measure provided better capturing of pain. And essentially, what has changed from the MDS 2.0 for 3.0 is that it focuses on a resident interview versus the staff assessment. Staff assessment is used only when the resident cannot be interviewed for pain. And there was concern about, well, what about cognitively impaired patients? And during the development and testing, 89% of residents were able to report on the pain. And resident pain has been shown to be significantly more accurate than staff assessment in determining that pain. In regards to the pressure ulcers, the purpose of the proposed measures is to report the percentage of stage 2 to 3 ulcers in nursing facilities.
We're just doing the pain. Yeah. 9, 10, and 11. We'll come back to the pressure ulcers.
That's fine.
Okay. So our primary reviewer.
You guys flip flop on the different ones. So, your primary and some. Diane, I think your primary are in 10, or no, and 9, and your secondary are in 10, and your primary are in 11.
So, just to frame this, there's three measures here. Oh, sorry. There's three measures. One looks at basically short-stay patients, meaning the rehab, the subacute rehab population, and assesses whether there's been improvement or a reduction in either frequency or severity of pain from a baseline measure. Okay. The other two look at an absolute measure, percentage with certain level of severity or certain frequency. So it's numerator of under all residents eligible numerator with pain that exceeds a certain threshold, either in terms of severity or frequency. So it's not a change measure. Mm-hmm. It's an absolute measure. And then one of those two absolute measures is in a short stay resident population, and the other is in a long stay, long-term care, non-rehab resident population. Would that be accurate?
That's correct.
Okay. So the one we're talking about now is the short-stay effective pain management. So this is actually put in a positive in response to Bill's comments of earlier. And effective means that there's been an improvement from a baseline. And if we could go to the denominator. And numerator statement. Okay. So
So there's limitations by power. In other words, if there are fewer than 20 eligible residents in the facility, this measure is not publicly reported. And that make the reasons for that were discussed earlier, and that makes sense. So you're up at numerator. So the numerator is the number of short-stay residents with a 14-day assessment or discharge assessment who can self-report, so this is MDS 3.0, and who are on a scheduled pain medication, reporting a defined, predefined reduction in pain when compared to the prior assessment. Okay. So first of all, it excludes people who are not on a scheduled analgesic, who may well have significant pain. So I don't understand that particular criterion. And secondly, it's MDS 3.0 self-report, where we don't have correlations or a clear comparison in terms of the correlation between 2.0 and 3.0. And because it's self-report, and because these are residents with, if not dementia, other reasons for cognitive impairment, such as pain, such as exhaustion, such as delirium, such as transfer trauma, we really don't know. And the, what we're given here, we have no assessment of level of cognition in the validation sample. It just says, you know, 900 or X thousand nursing home residents with no way to know what their cognition was. So given that this is nursing home residents we're talking about who, by definition, are very frail and vulnerable, whether they're short stay or long stay, not knowing the cognitive status of the subjects in whom this measure was tested is a major flaw in my view, the validation data for this. So it's both the issue of lack of comparative data between 2.0 and 3.0, not having a sense of the either the test or the validation sample, their cognitive levels and stratification by cognition and performance of this measure. And then my third major concern from the reliability standpoint is the measure developers point out that research shows that prevalence of pain in nursing home populations ranges anywhere from 40 to 60% to higher of moderate to severe chronic pain. Yet the level that we're finding on this measure averages 20%. And the range is 3% to 40%, suggesting that we're teaching to the test. When people know they're going to be publicly reported, for some reason they find less pain. And I'm very, very concerned that we're not measuring what we think we're measuring. And the fact that the gold standard nurse to gold standard nurse has a high correlation is not surprising. The fact that the gold standard nurse to a nurse trained by the gold standard nurse has a high correlation is not surprising. There's no validation data on the use of these measures in the standard environment, usual environment, with no extra training, no oversight from the gold standard nurse as compared to the gold standard nurse. So there is no gold standard comparison. So I'm pretty worried that we're saying to the public, these are accurate measures of pain levels in nursing facilities, when in fact they're very likely not to be because of the public reporting and the pressure on facilities to underreport, which is overwhelming. And we have no way of measuring that. One of the things, those of us who live in New York, there was, you know, full-time ads that Nursing Home Compare took out in the New York Times, comparing quality of nursing homes, and one of the things was pain levels. And it was very clear to those of us who work there that the best quality nursing homes had the highest pain scores, and the nursing homes you wouldn't send anybody to had the best pain scores. And this is the opposite of what we should be doing. And, you know, it's an unintended consequence, but a predictable consequence of public reporting of this stuff. I think it is having the reverse effect. That is, it is more likely that pain is not going to be identified and addressed rather than less likely. And I think we have a responsibility to at least test that hypothesis before we put forward these measures. So those are my three primary concerns, the MDS 2.0 to 3.0, that assuming that because we have variability on 2.0, we will on 3.0, self-report versus staff identification are really different measures particularly in such a vulnerable, cognitively vulnerable population, the lack of stratification and risk adjustment by cognitive status and facility type, and the impact of public reporting on gaming are a concern with this as well as the other two measures.
Yeah, this is Naomi Nariman. Diane and I have collaborated on this, and I fully concur. The other thing that I would like to point out is that there's no crosswalk between satisfaction and pain, so people with moderate pain may feel comfortable with it. It's a very subjective kind of measure, and if they're satisfied, then being medicated any further just to show improvement, as it were, or difference in score may be more harmful than not. So I think some crosswalking between self-reporting and observation, and also with satisfaction, which of course is part of what palliative care is about, is fulfilling the patient's own goals, makes this a very narrow, if not risky, kind of pain measure to really assess whether pain is there or not.
And obviously, I'm speaking both for Naomi and myself when I say that there could be nothing more important than the appropriate relief of suffering in this particular part of the human population. And I obviously, this is what I do for a living, is palliative care. And so it's distressing to say that I don't think the technology has caught up to, the measurement technology has caught up to the reality of improving care in the nursing home. But my biggest concern is not that these measures are neutral, but that they're actually having the reverse effect, that they may actually be worsening quality of care because there's such a strong incentive not to identify pain.
One more thing I just want to say is that it was startling to me that there was no mention here of observational approach to pain management, given the size of the population in nursing homes with dementia. Now, notwithstanding the 89% validity test of self-reported self-reporting among dementia patients in pain, that's very difficult to believe. Quite frankly, I would like to see more studies on that. People with dementia reporting on pain. I would imagine that at least in some cases, in certain dementia levels, there would be some crosswalking with observational approach. And there was no mention of an observational approach. Not, and by the way, with the folks who spend, the nursing home staff that actually spend time with the patients, not just the nurses, but the LPNs and the CNAs. So the crosswalking, the self-reporting, and the fact that this measures just do not really apply to people with dementia, which, of course, is most of the patients in nursing homes, most of the residents, I should say.
I just want to clarify, this is a time-limited measure, so you took that into account also.
I could go on with critiques, but it assumes that there's a baseline measure, and there's nothing provided here that says with what likelihood, what's the prevalence that somebody comes to a subacute rehab facility with a discharge from the hospital baseline measure? We don't know. My guess is not that many, A, and B, that the nursing home has zero control over whether it gets a baseline measure from the institution from which the resident is transferred. So that's a big concern because it's a change measure. What are you starting with? But that was a lower level.
Fundamentally, from a consumer perspective, I thought that the move in 2.0 to 3.0 from essentially staff assessment of pain on the part of the patient to the patient's assessment of pain on the part of the patient was very positive. I will, without going point for point to your comments, pain management perception is reality, notwithstanding that it's not more pain management or less pain management, but the right pain management that you want, which I think was, in essence, one of your points. I'm sort of concerned about the unintended consequences of not moving forward with this, knowing that there's going to be real problems in the beginning. And I'll give you my example. When we first started publishing safety measures, error measures at hospitals, it was some of the hospitals with the very best reputations that had the worst results. Mm-hmm. And after several years, we determined that that was correct. But we never would have done the evaluation to find out if that was correct had the measures not been published. And so, notwithstanding that I think everything you said is accurate, I am inclined to opt in favor of not having the perverse consequences of not moving forward.
Could somebody tell me what are the consequences? I don't understand that. What are the consequences of not moving forward? What's the trade-off of accepting what we consider not really to be a scientifically valid and reliable measure at this point?
I'm going to answer, again, from a consumer's perspective and then defer to the co-chairs and the staff. We're sort of early adopters on the public reporting scene, and we've never been sensational. We do hospitals, but we do some nursing homes. We do some insurance measures, but our thing is hospitals. But my point is, we have heard for years that the data isn't good enough, and the methodology needs to evolve somewhat. And on some fundamental measures, it has been our experience that the measures don't get there until you start using the data for that type of measurement. And so, if you're in the New York Times, and it's real easy for me to say, you know what, we're going to have to work through the kinks. But I just think pain management is one of the things that nursing homes are supposed to do. They're one of the results we're supposed to get. And I didn't have the same sort of visceral reaction to the fundamental flaws, but I only saw the definition of numerator and denominator here. So I will stop and just explain why I will vote, how I will vote with what I've said.
To answer your question, what I seen previously in work I did with nursing home quality and the measures is the same issue you talked about, which is studying to the test and sort of, you know, doing the loopholes of that, is the same issue, is that those measures that get reported is what they focus on. And so whatever the measures are that are being, any provider, is whether they are important or not, that's what they will focus on. So you will see some improvement. Those who want to game the system will game the system and find the loopholes to game the system no matter what, whether it's chart abstraction data, whatever reporting data. I mean, all of us have an experience where we go to buy something and someone hands us the stuff and say, this is how you should vote because you're going to get called a week from now from our survey people. And if you answer bad, I'm not going to get paid. And so I mean, I think all of us have that at some point purchasing something. And so really what it comes down to is if you don't have any measures at all, it just doesn't get the same level of focus and attention. And so that's the flip side to what you said. Just because it's an important, we all said it's just an important, if we use that as a metric, then just put all the measures through and say go with them because they're all important. Bruce's comment earlier, though, too, is waiting for the data to be perfect means that most of the measures will never do because that's a good way to kill the measures in moving forward. So we have to balance the practicality and balance everything as we go forward on it. And I think that's why NQF set up the different areas and to talk about that and figure that out. And I've seen measures, this is my third different panel I've been on, nursing home and others, I've seen some measures that have gone through that the group just held their nose but said it was so important we needed to get the measure out there. Again, as we said, this is a review process and it goes up through, and you know, one of the things that Christine and I have to do is we have to take it to the full panel and we'll present, you know, all those issues. And just because we've approved it or not approved it doesn't mean that it may not still get through the process. I've seen measures that the committees have put forward that get turned down. I've seen measures that we voted down that end up getting approved by NQF.
So here's an even more drilled down question. These questions are part of MDS 3.0, and they are rolling out in October with or without NQF endorsement. Is that correct?
Correct. The MDS items are, yes, not the measures.
The item.
Not the map.
The MDS, yeah, the items in the items on the MDS are rolling out in October,
right?
And there, whether we endorse or not endorse, there will be other people that can take the MDS data and create their own measures and do anything else. They just can't call them an NQF measure.
So tell me what the salience of being able to call it an NQF measure is, as opposed to everything else that's going on out there.
I will defer to CMS whether CMS would report. I mean, CMS has a large cadre of MDS measures that are used for different issues. They have MDS measures that are used in the survey process. They have MDS measures that some people, you know, that are in testing for payment type reform. They have MDS measures that they publicly report, and they have MDS measures they use for research purposes. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, will CMS use a publicly reported measure that's not NQF endorsed?
One thing and then let CMS respond. One thing about NQF endorsement, we're considered a voluntary consensus standard setting organization. And under the NTTA rule, the federal government is supposed to use voluntary consensus standards in lieu of newly developed standards if they meet their needs. So to a certain extent, CMS generally uses NQF-endorsed measures versus those that aren't, but there are reasons that they may go forward, and we can have CMS address that as well.
And I just wanted to bring a point up about the measures, not answer for CMS in regards to endorsement, but for the pain management measure, and we probably didn't make it clear enough in the numerator statement, but we assumed that there is a prior admission assessment. So we were looking at the admission assessment compared to either the 14-day PPS or the discharge assessment. And then I guess secondly, we would be looking for time-limited endorsement with the all three of the measures, knowing that even with the development testing that we need to take a look and see what the responses are coming in from validation. But our hope was that this measure was an improvement in regards to eliciting the patient's voice, which for the majority of the time can be elicited in regards to response to pain.
Again, everyone agrees this is a critically important outcome, suffering among the residents. There's no argument about that. Everyone also agrees that it's much better and more valid if the report comes from the resident for those who are able to report. There's no debate about that. The question is, are those two factors sufficient for NQF endorsement?
This is Darlene Thompson. I just have a couple of comments. And I agree. I mean, I'm not going to go through how important this is. But first of all, it's making the assumption that pain medication is the only thing you're going to count for effective pain management, because that's one of your key questions. And I'm a firm believer and personally use non-pain medication interventions for my chronic pain, and it does work. So I think that that's a flaw in and of itself. The second thing is it's looking at, yes, there will be a baseline, because the baseline will either be the resident's OBRA admission assessment or their Medicare 5-day PPS assessment, and then you're looking at either their discharge assessment or their 14-day. But what that means is that any short-stay patient, which we have earlier recognized as anybody who lives in the building under 100 days, after day 14, you're on your own. We don't care, because you're not being covered in the short-stay measure and you're not being covered in the long-stay measure, so you just drop that big group of residents whose pain management improvement may occur after day 14. If you have a resident come into the facility, they may not be starting therapy by the time you do your five-day PPS-MDS assessment. And but once they start therapy, depending upon what they're having therapy on, you're going to see either the intensity of that pain go up or the frequency go up. And where there's no allocation in that. And when you look at the second measure, short stay measure of going from moderate to severe, what I don't understand is why someone didn't sit there and look at, for your short stay resident, is there effective pain management, from looking at their pain scale from their most current short stay assessment, whatever that might be, to their prior one. And you know, and look at it throughout the continuum of that person's short stay, and not just look at their 14-day, not just look at whether they're on a pain medication management system, but look at, has there been an improvement in the intensity or frequency of their pain during their short stay, comparing their most current short stay assessment, whatever that might be, or discharge assessment, to the prior one. It's just my comment.
CMS ready to answer the question? I still want that to slip through the cracks.
Right. Well, I'll answer a question. I don't know if it's the question. And it speaks to this issue of patients and residents who have cognitive impairment. When the measure was constructed, and I have to admit that this is an assumption, that by relying on J200, should the pain assessment be conducted, that we would, by definition, restrict pathway A, which is the self-reported assessment, to those who could respond. And for those people who could not reliably respond, that the objective nursing assessment would come into play. So it's, having said that, you know, we still are in the position of having to rely on the data that will be forthcoming and not on the data, because we are still talking about 3.0 implementation starting October 1. So we acknowledge those.
So I guess one question is, should NQF endorse a measure that actually isn't in practice yet, that we have very little on the ground opportunity to validate? Is that true for all of these measures?
For all the RTI measures that are coming forth that are paid for, the funding was paid to RTI by CMS, they're all coming in as time limited, right? The MDS 3.0 measures, is that correct? Mm-hmm. So the request from the unless we thought they're so great we could up it, but the request from the measure developer is that they be time limited, mainly because they test it with 3.0 coming forward.
And then the other question for CMS was the likelihood that you will continue with public reporting of measures that are not NQF endorsed.
As far as the ones that are going to be tested with 3.0, those aren't intended to be publicly reported until they've actually gone through the full testing and we have those test results, and then we would be submitting them for full endorsement. So we're talking public reporting of those really after that stage. Correct. What will happen is we'll continue to report the 2.0 for a certain period of time. We will implement MDS 3.0, collect the data, test the data, and there will be a pause in terms of public reporting. And then when there is sufficient data and it's gone through that testing, we'll resume
Will you report a measure that has not been NQF endorsed? Maybe, I mean, unless it has some other consensus, a measure that doesn't have consensus, let me rephrase it, a measure that doesn't have consensus development support, would you publicly report those measures on Nursing Home Compare?
We would bring it back to CMS and have an internal discussion of where we would want to go with that, if that were the case, and for what purpose we might use it, whether it's for further research and whether or not I can't say definitively yes or no.
I know in Rhode Island and several other states, you're seeing more and more in statutes for public reporting that they have to be NQF or consensus or similar to what the language CMS has. So we're a small little state, so it doesn't really matter a great deal. But if we don't have an NQF endorsed measure, we can't report it. That's sort of the position we've taken in the state.
Dave, may I make a follow-up comment? I want to make a comment specifically about the staffing measures. You know, we're being legislatively mandated to report certain staffing measures, and they're going to go without NQF endorsement if they have to, because we've got a timeline and a legislative mandate. And I guess I also wanted to say, and this is not publicly reported, but we will continue to use in the survey process the measures that will be useful for the survey process, which are very different than the kinds of measures you would publicly report.
I have a clarification question. If we endorse this today and the testing is going to go on and will not be reported until it's tested, doesn't it seem a little bit in the reverse? Doesn't it seem like we ought to be reviewing this after the testing goes on between 2.0 and 3.0?
Yeah, time-limited approval means it would be NQF endorsed, so you could go forward and publicly report it, but it's time limited and come back. So if you happen to be an organization that's bound by needing to have a consensus development process, like I won't pick on CMS, I'll pick on the state of Rhode Island, we would report it, and then when the time limit expires, we wouldn't be able to report it anymore. We'd stop reporting it until it got NQF endorsement again.
Okay, but what I'm hearing is that CMS is not going to report it publicly until it's been tested.
Right, but they can still, the question really is whether they could test it and find it and then decide to report it without NQF endorsement or not.
Well, if we have it time limited, it means, I'm a little confused about the sequence. If they're not going to report it until they test it.
Well, just because it's time, there are thousands of NQF endorsed measures that are not being publicly reported by anyone out there. So just because we endorse it as an organization doesn't mean that CMS or State of Rhode Island or anyone else is bound to have to publicly report it.
Yeah, I'm asking the reverse question. I'm asking if it's not going to be reported until it's tested,
yeah,
and we endorse it today, then it's not going to be reported anyway until it's tested. Why can't we look at the testing once it's done?
What's the salience of NQF endorsement or not?
Does it allow them to move from the 2.0 data that we know has the fundamental flaw to the test 2003 data? Is that why you submitted it? Because I have a totally different question, but I didn't understand why you said what you said. Do you want this approved?
Yes. And in fact, the concern about the prior testing, this has been...
CMS should answer that question, not RTI.
Right. Yes, it would be ideal if we could at least get the time limit endorsement, and you know, but at the same time, we are very interested in your feedback and your input. So that was part of the reason in, although maybe interpreted as premature, to start the process.
Could you say why you want NQF endorsement at this stage? What difference will it make for you, for CMS? Could you explain that to me?
That's a really good question.
because if NQF does have a reputation to protect,
yes,
in terms of the validity and reliability of the measures that we endorse, I would think. And therefore, I think that it is clear that MDS 3.0 is going to roll out.
It is.
And CMS will report, frankly, what it decides to report. But, you know, if NQF is so, you know, leans too far in the other direction of saying this is very important, we want to hold their feet to the fire, so we're going to endorse the measure despite all of the lack of validation and reliability studies that everyone would agree scientifically really ought to be required. I think there's a serious risk of losing that bully pulpit,
yeah,
in terms of the rigor and quality of the measures. That's not to say these are not important things to address. We all agree they're all really important to address. But Is that really our role, is to highlight things that are important to address, or is it to really assess the validity of the measures?
Diane, I don't think everyone agrees that it isn't ready enough for a 12-month endorsement. I think that's premature. I have a question, though, of the technical person. Is that you? Mm-hmm. Because, and I apologize, I'm not looking at the full definitions. Percent of short-stay residents, this is 009, who are on a scheduled pain medication regimen at admission, and, all in caps, who report lower levels of pain. So I think if this is done one way, what that would mean is we've given you a script, and has it helped? Is that what this measures? Because if it does, then I'm all for it. But if it doesn't, then I don't know what it means. In other words, there was a comment before that, you know, sometimes what we try and do is deliver pain management without medicine. I think that's irrelevant to this measure. Mm-hmm. I think this is, hey, we're giving out the scripts. Are they doing any good, or are we just passing out pills for the fun of it? Is that what you're trying to get at here?
The focus of the measure when we discussed it at the last technical expert panel was looking at the need for looking at this particular population, the short stay population, and taking a look at on admission their pain level. As you said, they're giving a script, and then at either the 14-day or the at discharge, being able to say that their pain has been reduced since, as you mentioned, being on a prescribed pain medication.
Well, if not, take them off. But my question is, right, is does the numerator require that the center, that the provider, mm-hmm, will have given the script, or in some way is that a change? Because if you're just saying, hey, how many people are on pain medication and it went down even though we didn't change anything, is that noise in there? In other words, do you have some patients who have been on a pain medication for a year, come in, you say, yeah, you're on a pain medication, and 14 days later you do the assessment and nothing's changed? Well, of course nothing's changed because nothing has changed.
Right.
They're on the same med. Is that noise going through this measure? Do you? I should ask you, Diane.
I mean,
you,
the issue here is that there are many things that cause pain to go down 14 days or a month after admission to a subacute rehab. Most importantly, it's healing of whatever the acute injury was. It's time that has much more salience than Tylenol or morphine or anything else you give. So, as well as things like them starting to feel safe in the environment and feeling well cared for and having the appropriate type of wheelchair and cushioning devices. So, you can't separate those things out. That's the problem.
This seems to be
That's
the
That's why I have concerns about the right, denominator requirement.
This seems to be the... Is this the reverse of that? Which is this a... Because the... Is this... Hey, we gave them pain medication, and 2 weeks later, nothing got better, so maybe we should get them off of the pain medication.
Yes.
I mean, is this an overuse measure? Because that would imply that the only people in the numerator and denominator are people for whom the medication is new. If this is people for whom the medication is I don't mean new at admission, but new at cause. So if it's a fall or something like that mm-hmm, you know, the primary care doctor gave them the script 3 days before they got there or something. Is that what you're trying to measure? Is essentially some measure of, gee, we're giving these out and it's not working?
Yes.
I'm actually, what's the issue with that?
You asked a good question, but it's certainly not clear in the specifications that that's what it's about.
All I'm looking at is the little summary thing. So, if that's it, I'm still a believer.
I think the issue was really self-reporting of pain. You know, the person seeking medications. You know, I think we all agree pain is important and medication need to be used. But the issue is whether it should go away from the professional assessment to the patient satisfaction and patient seeking the medication. Is that the main question? I thought the first question description is this is the one. You know, that's the main issue really. That we are empowering the patients to be asking for, reporting the pain and asking for medications, you know. And then if that is so, the two issues are, safety, because the professional judgment how much to give, and I know, you know, certain populations really, no matter what you do, will be asking for medication or will over-report their pain as well. And there are variation in the nursing home as well in terms of the mix of the patient populations.
Right.
So if that is the consideration, then certainly, you know, it can be tested and then assessed later on that this is a new measure which is basically empowering the patient population to really report their pain and ask. Otherwise, we're doing everything professionally. You know, every time, you know, these are all mandated. It's a vital sign, fifth vital sign. So you say the pain is reported, and now the measures that 5 hours after the pain, you know, tablets are given, pain is reported. All that is there. So it's just a removal of the emphasis from professionals to the patient. Is that the intention of this pain?
The intent of the measure, when we discussed it during the TEP, we wanted to focus on a positive measure for the short stay. And given that they come from post-acute, with a lot of the quality measures, your concern is, oh, is it something that, for lack of a better word, you know, you're being dinged for, that is actually something that the patient has come with, say an infection or something like that, from the acute care facility. This was an attempt, and in discussions during the TEP, to say, well, if a patient comes in after the, and for the short stay, many of the patients come from an acute care facility, and they come in, they have an assessment, they have a pain assessment, are prescribed a medication, and then that pain has improved before they're either discharged or the 14-day assessment. And the reason for the focus, there was a lot of discussion about one assessment versus another. Why can't you go further out? And in looking at the short-stay population and their general length of stay was to give a facility credit that the pain was assessed, it was addressed, and there was improvement in the patient's pain.
Can I add something to that from the RTI? That given this discussion, I think it's very clear, as you said earlier, that this is a very important measure. And the intent of this particular measure is not to address all effectiveness of pain. It is a very conservative measure in saying we know this is a very important issue. We can't measure all of everything that is related to this, but let's take a small subset of residents who at the time of admission were able to say that they had pain and to look at 14 days later or a discharge to say, has the pain decreased? If they said they had pain and were started on pain medicine, was that effective? Is this enough to assess effectiveness of pain management? No. Is this a start to begin to address issues of effective pain management in long-term care facilities? Yes. So think of it that way, as a conservative measure to begin to address a problem that we all know is there, and this is on the road towards evaluating the effectiveness of pain management, but it is not sufficient in terms of addressing all effectiveness of pain management.
It is I'm going to talk.
Yes.
Several points. First of all, I think we all recognize this is somewhat of a departure for a quality measure, and it's a first attempt at actually showing improvement on an individual basis. Most of the quality measures are cross-sectional measures which show how the population is doing at a given point of time. This is an early attempt to show some change and to show effectiveness on an individual basis, which I think is a good thing and I think is an important thing. But as we can see, there are potential flaws to it, and it's not been well tested. Which gets back to the meaning of the term endorsement. And I'm not sure that endorsement is really the proper term. Probably if we ask, do you think we should go ahead and test this, not publicly report it, but test it first and see how it works and see if it has validity and reliability, probably we would all agree. It may not be a perfect measure, but it's a start at getting to what we really want to be measuring with appropriate pain management. But I think the term endorsement is sort of throwing us off because we're not ready to, I don't think anybody here is ready to endorse it as a publicly reported measure that we feel confident really means something because we don't know yet. If I were asked, would I vote to go ahead and say NQF says it's okay to go start testing this, I'd probably say yes. If I were asked, do you endorse it as a measure that should be reported to the public, I would say no, because I don't know how it's going to work yet.
What's the question? So actually, let me phrase it there, because we get to make some stuff up as we go along here. A small thing, NQF doesn't develop or test measures, so it wouldn't be that we're testing it for. But I think what I hear for is a motion on the table that we vote to approve the measure time limited, with the caveat, the condition attached to that time limited, that not be publicly reported until such time as sufficient reliability and validity testing is done and comes back to NQF. That's kind of, if I could summarize what you said, Bob, that would be a motion to put on the table. I mean, we can vote it, but I'm going to put a motion on the table for a discussion. Yeah, they're going to say, no, you can't do that, but I don't care.
May I add one more?
That's why they picked me.
What I want to ask is one more, something related to another caveat that I'd like to consider. Is there a way that we can know, this isn't mentioned here, that the self-reporting is going to be done, that we're going to stratify between those who can report, self-report, and those who cannot? In other words, can we add some kind of a risk or stratification aspect, is that we're not assuming that all of the patients who are going to be residents that are going to be
if you added in that we're recommending an endorsement of time limited with sufficient validity and reliability testing, including the information on the cognitively intact and not intact, people who can report and not report, understanding that. So rather than saying it has to be stratified and bucket them in there, we just want information understanding that. Yes, Dee, do you want to add a third condition?
Well, I think there's several conditions. And I always find this a problem when people put the numerator before the denominator, because when I look at the numerator, you have to have had a medication, right? But the denominator is everybody.
No, I don't think so. The same denominator. The denominator is everyone who's been on a pain medicine.
Who have been on a schedule. Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, it's the same. Yeah.
And that would be a real problem.
But there's another problem. Oh, you're right. I'm glad that's not a problem, because that would be a huge problem. There's a smaller problem that has, I think it's applicable to a lot of measures, of what to do when you have missing data. Mm-hmm. And my feeling is always with missing data, people should fail. I mean, not people.
So I've heard a couple of conditions to modification before we vote. One is it's time limited without reporting, that reliability and validity testing come back, which includes the issue of being able to self-report and not self-report. What to do with missing data, and let me add something Bruce said on early on. Though in understanding the information of when, since it's a change measure, to Bob's point, when the measure doesn't change but it's 1-1, some understanding, because the self-report's on a 0-10 scale. So if you stay at 1-1, you don't get counted in the numerator. You don't look like you improved. And I think all of us might say, well, if I'm 1 out of 10, and I'm on analgesia, I'm okay with that. So understanding that the range of 0 to 10 is not necessarily linear as we go forward in that part of the reliability testing.
I have to add to that yes. There, and I think Mary Jane mentioned this before, as did Naomi, there are people who would rather have their pain at a 4 or a 5 than be on an opioid, and we don't allow for that. And this whole issue of measures that start with what the resident chooses or wants and go from there is completely lacking in this whole measure set. But it's particularly important in pain management, mm-hmm. because a facility will get dinged for someone whose pain goes from a 3 to a 5, even though the resident may have said, I tried that stuff, I don't want it, I'd rather live with this level of pain. That's good quality care, but the facility will be punished for it. And that's a big problem with these measures.
Actually, if it goes from a 3 to a 5 or just stays a 3 to a 3, I think they get equally dinged. The point is we're giving them – they've said we want the drugs. They've had the consult with the doctor who has said, okay, give me the morphine, and that hasn't helped. Their pain score hasn't improved. That's the moving part here. Did the pain score improve or not as a result of the intervention? I think the only thing that needs to be really thought through is when's the intervention? If treatment is started before the patient arrives at the door, it seems to me those are the folks who should be complaining about being dinged. And to make sure I understood your point, because what was the amendment that you just made? Because it was real important.
What to do with missing data?
And the assumption is, if there's a reward for gaming, you should try as much as you can to not have the bad news simply be eliminated by leaving it blank.
Right.
I completely agree.
Bob and then Joel.
I was just going to say, I think we have to be careful. There's a lot of different individual resident stories that we talk about whether someone's going to get dinged or not, but we're not looking at individuals here. We're looking at a population. And while there are residents who prefer not to be on opioids or to be on minimal opioids and to have more pain, we don't know yet how this is going to look as an overall measure until it's tested. Likewise, remember that this, in context, we're looking at three measures here. We're not only looking at this measure, which is a measure of change, but we're also looking at the two prevalence measures of moderate to severe pain in short and long-term patients, which could be high or low depending on the facility and also depending on how well the facility manages its pain. And you have to look at the first measure in context with those measures, which actually have been reported now for several years. I think this is in all candidness, this is an experimental measure until, and it should be recognized as such until it is tested. The other two measures, I think, have a little bit more history to them. But whether it can be gamed, whether an individual patient's choice might ding a facility, I'm not so much worried about that. If you document in the chart, they don't want this, this is why they've had informed consent, on an individual basis, the state's not going to come in and say, you're not treating pain appropriately, because I've documented that this is patient choice. But I'm more concerned about the validity of the measure for a population, and I think it's experimental at this point.
All right, Heidi, and then we'll take a vote on this measure.
Yeah, just some mixed thoughts about this, Diane. When you said, you know, the great organizations just on the five-star program being affected and it not being reality, but Bruce saying that those strong organizations were sort of pushed to dig deeper and to do better. I've seen particularly the short-term, you know, high-end short-term rehab organizations that are doing exceptional job on long-term and short-term side, really struggling. Pain is obviously, as you all know, one of the biggest hot buttons, which is a good thing, which is good for those we serve. I think the gaming is going to go on, but I do think that we need to make certain that we look at, you said, the time frame. We are seeing part of the biggest problem is that patients are coming in before they come into the door, as you mentioned, Bruce, in pain because they're not being premedicated before they're leaving the hospital as just a simple solution. So there's a lot of complexity, as we know, in all of this. But I do think that the public reporting, as much as it pains me to see good organizations not come out strong, you know, is doing its magic. It's creating the best of organizations to go deeper with their innovation.
All right, Darlene. 10 words or less. You said it was short.
It's short, but it's more than 10 words. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure everybody understands that the way that measure is written is that it's either the frequency or the intensity could go down equates to effective pain management. So my frequency can go down to rarely, but my intensity could go up to horrible, and that's considered effective pain management.
Okay. Make sure that's in the notes, Suzanne. And feedback to RTI. Okay, so the vote on the table. No. Vote on the table, because we're going to get through the day.
This is just a question for everybody and for all the measures. How are we going to explain this to the public? Because I think it's something that's because usability issue is something that should be addressed in the testing.
That's what Bob said. This is an experimental.
Are we over-medicating?
So the caveat there, so the vote on the table is time-limited without public reporting, because it's not ready for public reporting. We want to see reliability, validity testing, usability testing, understand the cognitive testing, missing data, this issue of the Darlene Bruce issue of the intensity, frequency, the actual amount on it. And then we, if all those are met, we still reserve the right to ask for additional validity and testing. That doesn't mean it's you meet all those and then it gets NQF endorsement.
So, because the bottom line is that we're not voting for endorsement.
No, we're voting for a time-limited endorsement that is not allowed to go forward on public reporting. These guys are going to say you're creating your own new category. That's fine. It may get modified as it goes up through. I have a good feeling on how we're going to present this to what's the committee? CSAC. God, it seems like they're going to drop the bomb any day, but CSAC, as we go forward on the pain measures out there. You can vote against this. The current motion I'm putting before the group is that if you don't support that motion, you want another motion, you can vote against it, and then we can, it would be actually. I've not heard anyone wants to go up. It probably would go down to vote no at that point.
And one thing, usually with conditions, we first go back to the measure developer to see if they agree to the conditions or give a response to the committee, and then you can say, again, you have that option. So we would tell them what your conditions are, and they would give a response that you would then say yay or nay.
And some withdraw after they see the conditions and say, no, we can't do that. It's not feasible. Anything else? Okay. Do I need to restate the motion on the table? Okay. All in favor of the motion on the table?
Which is time-limited.
Time-limited, not reporting.
Aforementioned.
Yeah. Bruce, you want to say I didn't have to mention it again.
No, with the aforementioned.
Yeah.
Conditions.
Okay. Any opposed? One, 2, 3, 4. 4 opposed. Any abstaining? Okay. The opposing people want just for the record, dissenting opinion.
Just to say my name.
No.
Why your dissenting opinion? You'd vote to say not even just.
Not
ready for prime time.
Yeah.
So the 4 people are not ready for prime time. Okay. That's helpful to know. The other 2 measures are we. Can we knock those off quickly so people can get a quick bathroom break, or do we need to take a bathroom break? All right, the other 2 measures?
Well, I think the next one is mine.
Yeah. This is Naomi Nyerman. I really think the issues are very similar. They're not identical, but they're very similar. Mm-hmm. So all those conditions, I would apply to it, and I would make it, if I can call it a provisional endorsement, I'm willing to go that way. But I don't know what you can call it by your rules.
Limited.
It's a time limited that can't be publicly reported is closest thing to a provisional endorsement.
In my interest is to move it along. I really buy into the whole public reporting part. And the notion that the measure developers will have a chance to actually reexamine and even redefine this is very encouraging to me. If it doesn't go to the public, it means that it's going to move along, and we're going to get some benefit out of it, as opposed to making it, letting it go to sleep and become dormant. So I'm encouraged by that approach.
So the next 2 measures we're going to vote collectively together, which is time limited, no reporting. We want to see reliability, validity testing, issue about individuals who can and can't respond, missing data. They're not change measures, so we're not going to look at the change measures, but I do think we want to know about the intensity of measures because they do vary. Well, one already takes into the intensity concept, and we reserve the right to ask for additional things in the future. That's not blanket endorsement once they're all met.
There's just one monkey wrench I want to throw into the works here, and I actually put this into my written comments for both of my measures. And that is that if you actually look at data, and I know this is like challenging an article of faith, that assessment of pain has not been correlated with improved pain outcomes. And several systematic reviews have looked at this. Pain as the fifth vital sign has had no impact on pain outcomes in hospitals.
What do you mean by pain outcome?
Levels reported by patients.
These aren't true assessments.
Well, that's what we're looking at here. That's what we're looking at in frequency or intensity, prevalence of pain. My point is that why would we measure it if we didn't think it was actionable, right? We don't want to measure things just for the sake of measuring things. We want to measure things that are actionable. So that assumed link between the process and the outcome being the patient-reported level of pain, has not been demonstrated in the scientific literature. So
you're saying there's nothing we can do as clinical community to manage pain?
Well, measuring it with patients, while a component of it is the most important thing, is workforce and education of workforce. And that's, you know, obviously not in our purview. But the assessment of pain in rigorously designed studies has not been shown to improve pain outcomes.
Treating pain
does, right. But the assessment doesn't lead to treatment. That's the problem.
This is just what is the pain level, and if it's not good, then that's what you would expect facilities to act on.
That's a rational, absolutely rational assumption.
No, this is so basic. This is we're paying money and putting patients at risk to give them these pills, and does the patient self-report that it's better?
Just trying to add the data from the literature to the discussion.
I think you're saying that the process measures haven't been correlated to outcome. This is an outcome measure. You could interpret it as a process measure, which is an assessment. This is an outcome measure. This is measuring the amount, the level of pain. Now, you can say it's a bad outcome measure because it's not good, well correlated. It doesn't address it. But this is an outcome measure that we have here.
We want outcome measures that are not actionable.
Take them off the meds. That's the action. If it's not improving, give them different meds or take
them off the meds. Well, I don't think the question is whether it's actionable. I think, and here's where I might disagree a little bit. I think it's an actionable outcome, but I think the interventions necessary to reduce pain require a level of knowledge and expertise that are not widely disseminated for whatever reasons, without being too critical of providers. Not everybody knows how to manage pain and use that information in order to reduce pain. I think for those that do have the expertise, and that's why we have a whole field of palliative medicine, and I think anybody who is a good practitioner of palliative medicine will tell you that the vast majority of those who have pain can be successfully treated. The fact that we're not doing a good job of it in many or if not most of our facilities doesn't mean that it can't be done. Nor does that mean that we shouldn't be measuring it, because certainly if we don't measure it, they're going to have no incentive to improve care. I think that itself is not a reason to not measure it. I think it's not our job to figure out how to make 15,000 facilities in this country adequately treat pain, but I do think it's our job to determine whether this is a valid outcome measure that should be measured.
Okay, motion on the table is... you voted on these last two? No, we haven't.
Oh, no, not 10 and 11.
10 and 11 for 10 and 11. Time limited. Not ready for public reporting. Give us more reliability, validity data with the additional caveats of understanding between individuals who can self-report, not report, how to treat missing data, and the different intensities out there. All in favor of that? All opposed? Two opposed. Any abstaining? The two opposing, you want to give your dissenting just so the record so we understand it?
Not adequate reliability and validity testing for the measure that's going to be used.
Okay, we'll take a 10-minute break, and we'll come back and we'll do pressure ulcers.
All right, thank you, everyone, for taking your seats. We're going to get started.
John, I didn't mean to take you down memory lane.
We're 2 measures behind time schedule, so we do need to move along. And the measures that we're going to be discussing right now have to do with pressure ulcers, both with short stay and long stay. We'll begin with an overview of the measures by the stewards, and then we'll go to the reviewers.
Okay, thank you very much. Yep, my mic's on. In regards to the pressure ulcer measures, the proposed measures report the percentage of stage 2 to 4 pressure ulcers in nursing facilities in both the short stay and long stay residents, but they do it in 2 different ways. The short stay measure reports on the percentage of pressure ulcers that are new or have not improved. And the long stay measure reports the prevalence of pressure ulcers in the high risk population. And that's defined by patients with impaired mobility, transfers, or comatose. Pressure ulcers, as we know, are a very serious medical condition. They're one of the most important measures in the quality of care in nursing facilities. They're high volume and can be high cost events across the spectrum of healthcare settings, from acute hospitals to home health. They may cause a patient discomfort and can lead to serious life-threatening infections, which substantially alter the resident's quality of life and increases the total cost of care. And indicative of the importance of this, as on a national level, there's numerous healthcare organizations that have ongoing guideline and educational efforts. And this is not an exhaustive listing, but the Joint Commission on the Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations, the Institute of Healthcare's Improvement 5 Million Lives Campaign, CDC's National Center for Health Statistics, and National Nursing Home Survey, On-Time Quality Improvement for Long-Term Care Program from AHRQ. Also, NQF is sponsoring the National Voluntary Consensus Standards for developing a framework for measuring quality for prevention and management of pressure ulcers, and the Advancing Excellence Campaign, again, for nursing homes, as this is one of the top goals. So obviously this is an important, on a national basis, as a clinical issue. And again, the proposed items from the MDS 2.0 to 3.0 have changed significantly. Specifically, the MDS 3.0 items have utilized the definitions of the National Pressure Ulcer Advisory Board, and also has the input of the Wound, Ostomy, and Continence Nurses Society. Essentially, the MDS 3.0 eliminates reverse staging, which doesn't reflect the true pathophysiology of healing of a pressure ulcer. It's based on the deepest anatomical stage. Unstageable pressure ulcers are now a separate item. The number of pressure ulcers that were present on admission is now collected for each stage. And again, probably most important, the definitions are now based on best practices and in accordance with the National Pressure Ulcer Advisory Board. We heard very anecdotally that a lot of nursing facilities were actually they were reporting or assessing the patient based on 2.0, but then also utilizing the National Pressure Ulcer Advisory Panel's definitions and sort of doing it, assessing 2 different ways for pressure ulcers. In regards to validity, with the development testing, the CAPRs were high, 0.92. And in terms of usability, certainly that this is one of the most important clinical issues for facilities to monitor and hopefully improve in terms of their rates. And then in regards to feasibility, again, this is it's a CMS mandated data collection, so it's very feasible for facilities to collect this data.
Thank you very much. The primary reviewer for this is Dr. Korn.
I think that this was probably one of the most comprehensively documented of the measures that probably came before any of you. And it was, like, really impressive to see the amount of evidence that has been accumulated over many years in support of this as a measure. I think that, you know, we all agreed that we were going to accept the importance of it, and I think that, that you really highlighted that, both from a quality perspective and a cost perspective. Looking at it, you know, and I'll just sort of reiterate a little bit what I think Roberta, that's your name?
Yes.
Roberta said, was, you know, this is a very clear measure. And I think that moving from MDS 2 to MDS 3 will even further clarify it, because it's very difficult and there's a lot of sort of subjectivity in stage 1. So this is now saying stage 2 to 4. It also is something that the data shows that there's huge room for improvement. There's a huge spread in terms of performance between some facilities and others, sort of between 8% and 18% for pressure ulcers. So there is a lot of room for improvement. And as was also mentioned, MDS-3 finally acknowledges the fact that there is no physiologic basis in reverse staging, which is a real relief. And there also, you know, one of the things they did in their sort of background lit review was there is no contradictory evidence to this. So, you know, there's nobody out there that sort of says this is questionable or we shouldn't be looking at this. In terms of the weakness of this particular measure, though, I should notice that at this point it is not yet harmonized with the way pressure ulcers are mentioned in other settings. Although it was noted that Deb Saliba and others who developed this measure really have taken this under advisement. They're working on it. And to the extent that they were able, they have started to try to utilize the same terminology and the same measurement mechanisms. The other thing that was noted was that the pressure ulcer rate does fluctuate in a manner that appears to be independent of care. So if you look at pressure ulcer rates, you will see seasonal variation. This also occurs with other things such as weight loss and, you know, a couple other clinical measures. So, and usually it's worsening in the winter months, and so one can speculate perhaps that it's related to sort of the burden of respiratory disease or whatever. Maybe the denominator is changing relative to the denominator of the acuity of the population during those periods. Mm-hmm. And the another question that I had, and maybe somebody can explain this, is, you know, if one comes in with the expectation that you're a short-stay resident and you develop a pressure ulcer, let's say, you know, 50 days into your stay, and you end up staying more than 100 days, are you still counted as a short-stay person who has, in fact, developed a pressure ulcer? And so that was something that I was wondering about from a sort of accounting perspective, because you could well be tipped over into, oh, now they're a long stay, so we don't count that. But in fact, they are short stays who've developed something. So I think that that's something to be looked at a little bit. They also noted that pressure ulcers are not well correlated with other quality measures, but that is not a new finding. We know that. And many researchers have kind of looked into that and tried to do aggregations, but it's been very difficult. There was also a question that I had, which appeared on page